You already know that Invisible Fence brand creates happier homes where pets can safely play in the yard out of danger. But did you know we also have products to help your pets avoid bad behaviors with trash cans, furniture, and unsafe areas both inside and out? We even offer a programmable pet door for more pet freedom. And expert installation plus professional pet training guarantee success. To schedule a free in-home consultation, visit InvisibleFence.com or call 1-800-578-3647.
Good morning!
Crib Live Radio presents the Morning Sports Report.
And this is my wake-up show. I'll be coming at you every morning. About this time, hoping to make your experience the best available in this price range.
An update and preview of everything going on in Pittsburgh sports. Now the Morning Sports Report. Trib Total Media. See what's next.
I think maybe Yankees fans are Invisible Fence brand owners. I mean, they're plenty relaxed. We love that Invisible Fence brand. Help their owners of their pets relax, enjoy more freedom while their pets are not running away from their properties. But, God, what a bar set last night at Yankee Stadium for dullness. I mean, regardless of how this game goes tonight, I'm quite sure the entertainment value is going to be 3,000% higher than last night's AL wildcard opener.
I'm not. I could see the exact same thing happening.
Really?
Absolutely. Arrieta three hits him, and that was what we had last year.
I don't know. At least you had a
game. I mean, I'm hoping not, but I mean, I'm watching that game, and I'm thinking this could be tomorrow night.
At least Jung Ho Gung will get an applause, but pregame, wow, I mean.
Well, they were roaring in the first inning when Tanaka struck out the first two guys. That was the last chance they really had to do anything.
Those that were there, I think there were a lot of people still on the train getting there. There's a lot of empty seats in that building last night. I'm with Ken. I think it might be a very low-scoring game, but I think the atmosphere will be 10 times better than what it was last night at Yankee Stadium. I know this. The better team advanced and the more interesting team advanced. The Houston Astros are more interesting than the New York Yankees by a lot. And that's saying something.
How about tonight? What do we expect atmosphere-wise? Guy, you said you pointed out last year it was, for the most part, everybody sitting on their hands in nervous anticipation.
Yeah, I mean, that's up to the – it'll be fantastic before the game, during introductions, and as both teams get their feet wet. But the Cubs can take the crowd out of it. The Giants did last year. I'm not saying they will, but, I mean, that can happen. If I'm not mistaken, the road team has won almost every one of these wild card games, haven't they? I think the Pirates beating the Reds may be the only home team to win.
I thought it was 2-5.
Is that what it is?
Yeah, somebody tweeted me last night it was 2-5.
Mm. Well, that's not real good trending into tonight, but who knows? Tim Kirchen picked the Cubs, so I feel good about the Pirates winning tonight because he's pretty much wrong all the time.
Well, unless it's a historical reference from the 1920s, then he's spot on.
Exactly.
Buster Olney's still picking the Pirates. He has since February.
He's going to go down with the ship.
I saw Tim front and center over in the Clint Hurdle press conference. He got his recorder up right on the microphone yesterday, right
That's
in front
I
of
do.
The MLB Network shot. So, Tim, I know you were there. Guy, I know you're ready for all the coverage here today, too. Anything that was said yesterday of interest, importance, intrigue, I actually think there were some lineup secrets revealed by Hurdle, even though he tried hard not to initially. But did you guys get the vibe that I did, that Harrison's in for sure tonight?
And yeah, I do. I mean, the way he talked about his OPS, his batting average the last month, and the fact that, as I understand it, each team makes one player available today, and he's the guy the Pirates are making available. Are you going to make a player available to the media that's not playing? That would be weird.
Well, not only that, but listen to this quote from Hurdle yesterday about the Pirates needing to avoid trying to just outslug the Cubs to beat Jake Arrieta.
I think we overcook a lot of other things other than winning one game. What's the best team you can put on the field to win the game tomorrow night with the task that you're taking upon with Arrieta being on the mound? That's what it really boiled down to for me. How athletic do you want to be on the bases, with the gloves, in the batter's box? Do you want to slug? There's some numbers that'll show you slugging against him hasn't been a real big success this year, the second half of the season. So it's just, there's a lot of things to take into consideration because you want to honor every player and give them the due time to talk about them because they've all worked so very hard and they all look forward to this opportunity.
I hear that. I don't know if that's bad news for Ramos Ramirez or Pedro Alvarez or both, but I think Pedro's going to play at first base, especially against a right-handed pitcher, even though the righty-lefty splits are different for Jake Arrieta. But I hear that soundbite, and I think that's opening a window for Josh Harrison to climb through and play third base and Aramis Ramirez to come off the bench, unless Harrison goes out to right field and Aram goes to third. But, you know, the other clip from Hurdle that really caught my attention was him talking about Josh Harrison just as a player.
He's got the highest OPS against right-handed pitching in the last 2 weeks, almost a month. I mean, I can give you all kinds of numbers. I mean, you can play both sides of the fence, but that you don't get inundated. You need to know them. I do think you need to know them. And, you know, you look at our roster in there, he's our hottest hitter. So how does that play? Y'all will find out real soon.
So what do those clips tell you, right?
That's like almost 100% feeling that Harrison's going to play today. And you're right, that one of the two, Pedro or Ramirez, will be out of there. But I agree with you. It sure feels like Aram, based on slumping more recently, is the guy to sit. And I'm not sure Ramirez will be ticked off about that, right? I mean, not that that matters, but he came here as almost kind of like just bonus icing on the cake for his career.
I'm sure he'd be disappointed. He wants to play against – I mean, everybody wants to play, and it's his former team and everything. But, you know, he's a pretty level-headed guy. He's been around enough, and for what you just said, Ken, he knows why he was brought here. And if they win, he's going to get his chance to play in, you know, some more games. So,
but it also sounds like they're going to be mad aggressive against this team, too, with small ball out the wazoo. Maybe I'm overreacting to that, but when he sort of mocked threw the slug thing out there, Tim, I got the sense they're going the total opposite way, right? They're going to try to manufacture a run or two no matter how, you know, however is possible, and take some chances, which I guess is good based on Arrieta's history of guys stealing against him.
I think you have to. If you're standing there waiting for a two-run homer, it'll be February and there'll be snowmen beside you. You'll still be standing out there waiting for it.
Yeah, which could happen. I mean, Keuchel did that last night, right? I mean, there are a million examples of pitchers dominating in one game.
For the record, days rest.
Snowmen 2-for-3 on steals against Jake Arrieta this year.
Okay, very good. Well, in terms of the enormity of the moment or the heat of the moment, Tim, you were talking to Jordy Mercer about kind of the atmosphere that they expect last night. And Arrieta had a response to his tweets about he bring it on, you know. That seems to be taking up a lot of the pregame hype for this game. But being over there talking to the players, what did you think was the takeaway there as to how much or little the crowd will matter tonight?
I didn't get much of a sense one way or another. I certainly didn't get the sense that the crowd would at all intimidate Arrieta. I think he wants it as loud as possible. That's the take that I had on it. Mm-hmm. That's how I interpreted his comments, and that's how I interpreted his attitude, for that matter.
But the Jordy Mercer stuff, the pandemonium, like...
I mean, like, well, first of all, just listen to this soundbite from Mercer, and you tell me if this sounds sincere to you. Take a listen.
I looked up a word today because I heard it, and I wanted to, like, actually know the definition of it. Pandemonium. And that just classifies what it's going to be like tomorrow night. It's pandemonium. And, I mean, we're all looking forward to it. It's going to be our third year in a row to have this, and we know that the first 2 years have been great, but we want the third year to be better than the first two. So
that's the famous Bob Prince clip from the game they beat the Giants in 71 to get in the World Series, and Juan Marichal, Richie Hebner, had made an error. And it led to an unearned run, and he came up, I think, with two men on, I believe, and hit a three-run homer. And Prince, right before the pitch, goes, "Man, what do they say? He giveth and he taketh away. If Richie hits one now, this place would be some kind of pandemonium. Here's the swinger! Get the goodbye!" And the place went nuts, and they went on to the World Series.
But Mercer needed to look it up.
I heard that word. Mercer needed to look it up.
Was he a vocabulary major at Oklahoma State? Needed to look up pandemonium?
I think to find out exactly what it means. There's a lot of words like that are used wrong.
It was just so funny how he
lobbed. Like, notoriety is a word that has changed in its meaning, but was used. Notoriety was a bad connotation. You were notorious because you committed crimes, because you did bad things. Notoriety now means you're famous. I mean, that has changed over the years. So, I think he was just saying he wanted to know exactly what it meant.
Well, the Arrieta stuff I want to listen to as well, because whether or not he's going to get Jag off of the week votes today, based on his tweets, he was asked directly, you know, to comment about his interaction with social media and the fans. And here's what Arrieta had to say as he got ready here now for the questions. They were right out of the gates. You knew they were going to be coming. He talked over at PNC.
You know, I expect it to be extremely loud from the get-go. You know, I know that the type of loyalty the fans have here. I know how passionate they are about their baseball here, and I wouldn't expect anything less. You know, I think the noise is something that you know, you just have to deal with. It's always there in a certain aspect. Obviously, tomorrow night is going to be magnified more than most games, but it is expected. It is something that I am comfortable dealing with, and it's exciting, you know, to be in an atmosphere where you've got 38,000 plus opposing fans. You know, some Chicago fans are going to be there, obviously, but you know, it makes those moments enjoyable for me.
Whatever keeps your hope alive, just know it doesn't matter. That's bald, bold. It might be bald also. It's
he
possibly
backed off of that a little bit.
I know. This one, like, let's go to the first one. He was talking about the Twitter interaction because this is going to judge my vote, yay or nay, here today.
Okay. Yeah. You know, I think it's a big part of you know, the fan player interaction, and it's all in good fun. I mean, I don't mean anything negative towards anybody. It's kind of the build up to the game. You've got two very passionate fan bases in Pittsburgh, and there's the support of the guys they have here, and obviously on our side with the fan base we have, who are extremely supportive of what we're trying to accomplish. So, you know, I think it is all in good fun. You know, there's nothing meant in a negative aspect there. I think it's just kind of a unique way to start interaction within the fan bases or within the players and the fans. So it's something I kind of like to do.
It's hard to really get outraged that that's soundbite good fun. It's just a build up piece, but at its essence, to be talking to the opposing fan base two days before the game, I want to cast that vote. I got it in my holster. I'm ready. Help me here.
No, I'm not going to help you because, I mean, he's actually doing, to a degree, what social media thought it was going to be when it was invented. He's interacting with the fan base, and he's joshing with them. But, you know, what social media has become is now everybody's a Twitter cop, and everybody's a Twitter troll, and everybody's turning something into a negative. That's why, what was the name of that new site that just launched? What's the new social interaction page that's supposed to be entirely non-negative? And if you say something... I don't remember what it was called, but like I don't have
Ashley
a problem.
AshleyMadison.com?
Yeah, well, that's different kind of interaction.
Different one.
I don't have a problem with it. I can't feign outrage over this.
Yeah,
it doesn't
I agree.
Piss me off.
I think
I don't
it's
care.
Neat that fans can have any interaction. I was thinking about this as a kid. If I would have had the opportunity to tweet players, how cool that would have been. I mean, I look back in the few times in my life as a kid that a Pirate came over the railing and talked to us, or Dave Burrows talked to us at practice one day through the glass, and how cool that was. You remember, 40, 50 years later, and I remember it. And now you have the opportunity to go back and forth, not just with other teams' fans, but with the players themselves if they care to engage. You know, and what he said wasn't so outraging, and at least, you know, what he said there, if that really makes you angry, I think you're looking for a reason to get angry. I'm voting right now, and I usually never do this. I don't like to do it performance based when people are trying and just fail. But I got to vote for Scobie. I mean, people forget about it already because it happened the day after last week's vote. But that Mike Tomlin can say all want that game's not going to define their season. I think it's going to, and I'm just missing those just. As far as I'm concerned, not only ruined a week, but ruined the first quarter of their season, at least.
Yeah, huge misses. I mean, division loss at home Thursday night. It's a great call.
And blowing a 20-6 lead. I mean, it wasn't like he went out there with a 49-yard field goal try, and they're down two, and they had trailed all night, and he just came up short. I mean, he had two opportunities to add to it, and the whole body of work over a month.
Boy, well, and Mike Tomlin really seemed upset about having to let him go, huh?
Oh,
boy,
man,
was
he vicious yesterday.
He was really, really just turned out about that. The poor guy was, I think, all in knots over having to release
Josh Scobie. If you heard the question and answer, at
well,
the
his
podium,
attitude about kickers was apparent at St. Vincent, which is totally stupid, and how much they how important they are to the game today to be so glib about it.
Karma.
The real jagoffs might have been him and Colbert for not having a second kicker on their roster that started this entire domino effect anyway.
Good call, guy. I think that should be the vote instead of Scobie, who's just at the mercy of his own suckedness, you know?
Suckedness. Suckedness. We're going with that. I would look that up right after I looked up pandemonium.
Pandemonium.
Suckedness.
This place would be... I wonder, I'm going to see if we can find that clip, Prince.
Well, Spiggs is up my alley of thinking. You know, he cast the first vote for Arrieta today on Jagoff of the Week Wednesday. For being a D-bag Jagoff bearded hipster who does jazzercise, get out of town, you Jagoff. Hashtag curse of the billy goat. Love it, Spiggs. I don't know if he does jazzercise, but I wouldn't put it past him. He does a lot of athletic stretching before the game. We've seen those little clips where he's got a whole big pregame routine. I don't know, Tim, did you want to play the clip from Hurdle talking, or from Tomlin talking about Scobie yesterday?
Tomlin talking about Scobie, sure.
It was very curt. There's no doubt. And I think Tomlin would cast the vote for Scobie if he had one to give today.
Mike, was Scobie hurt, and what did you see in Boswell that you liked?
Scobie was not hurt, to my knowledge. Boswell just did a nice job in the workout. And, you know, we worked him out on Saturday at Heinz Field, and it was a very good environment for a workout, obviously, because the weather wasn't great, and you had an opportunity to evaluate him not only in that environment, but under less than ideal conditions. Besides that, we've done our research on him and not only followed him since he's been in the league with several teams, but also when he came out of Rice University, and so got a great deal of comfort with him and excited about rallying around him and supporting him.
That wasn't entirely the right clip.
That's right. It goes on for 3 minutes. We don't need to hear the whole gist of it. But
no, it's just simply, there was one dismissive, no, he wasn't hurt, and... The question was, did you have any thoughts about keeping him? And the answer was a very terse no.
Right. I know. I mean, I can't blame Mike for cutting him. I guess Cabali was making the case they're going to keep him just for the money.
Right.
Aspect of it. $2 million that they're going to eat in cap space and the six-round pick. But that doesn't mean you should just keep making the same mistake over and over again if you don't trust the guy. And guy, as you pointed out, players were, at least one player was bitching at him, you know, this week, or coming out off the field and blaming him for the loss. So I think that's pretty significant.
Yeah.
But tell us who you would vote for today on Jagoff Wednesday. Sports Talk at TribWeb.com here on the Invisible Fence Brand Morning Sports Report. We're all brought to you by Duffy's Beer. Tim, you got a vote here today before we get to the mail, or you want to save yours for the masses?
Well, you know what? There are a lot of candidates, as there always are.
And I'm sure there'll be some audio with it.
Yeah, I usually keep a running tab throughout the course of the week. I've started to take this Jagoff of the Week voting very seriously since I came on board.
As you should.
Josh Scobie was chief among my candidates. I was considering going down the Scobie path just to vote for him. I really don't care if it's performance-related or not. I have no problems, no qualms saying it has to be something that's non-performance related. I'll give it for performance. So I considered Scobie.
No, but you have to think of the definition, if you want to look up pandemonium, of Jagoff, and failing when you're trying is not a Jagoff move.
The
Jagoff is doing something that you know is wrong. You do it anyway.
The Seahawk referees came to mind. Now, would they be considered Jagoffs?
Yeah. Oh,
because they were trying, but they also failed. So can I throw them under the tent?
Yes.
That's
lack
trying
of
and failure.
The rule book. Absolutely.
The Diamondback
girls. Especially the back judge.
The Diamondback girls were another group the ones that took the selfies for two straight minutes on television. And then it was another step further beyond that, because this turned into a social media maelstrom. I don't know if you're aware of this or not, but the next level to that story, which we first gave you on Friday, was the girls. This turned into a social media war between the Diamondbacks and some people who thought that the girls were being made fun of. That this is how people interact these days. That it was just a group of girls having fun at your baseball game, and here you are mocking them on your broadcast. So, of course, in the name of political correctness, the Diamondbacks felt guilty, and they offered them all tickets to come back to another game.
Man.
Now, let's take the...
Jeez, if they really felt guilty, they'd offer them tickets to a Cardinals game.
We'll take it one step further, because when they were offered tickets, now they have to act like they're offended, right? And they say, no, 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 we don't want tickets to your game. We're going to give them to a charity, some like abused women's shelter or something like that, which, okay, is a nice gesture. But at the same time, come on.
I mean, like they're going to sue like the guy that got filmed who was falling asleep at the Yankees game?
Right, like that guy. Yes, exactly, that guy. So like this turned into this politically correct back and forth ping pong match between this sorority at Arizona State and the Arizona Diamondbacks themselves. I thought about Jim Tomsula for farting on the microphone, the San Francisco 49er coach.
I missed
that. Was that confirmed?
No, okay, I believe the explanation. When I got the explanation, I believed
it. He's from Pittsburgh. I think he probably did.
So somebody moving in a leather chair. That's what the story was. Someone moved awkwardly in a leather chair. And if you've ever moved awkwardly in a leather chair, you know
unfair.
It can sound like a fart. So I considered all these for Jagoff of the Week. But the winner has to be the Tyler Johnson girl from yesterday. And if you didn't hear the story yesterday, Jimmy Kimmel did a man on the street bit. He always does a man on the street bit. But the man on the street bit was, what is your greatest accomplishment in life? And this girl said that her greatest accomplishment in life was cheating on her boyfriend and her boyfriend not finding out. And as the conversation went along, you come to find out the guy that she cheated on her boyfriend with was Tampa Bay Lightning forward Tyler Johnson.
Impressive thing I've ever done? I don't know. Cheat on my boyfriend and not have him find out.
You know, this is a television camera?
Yeah, it's an old boyfriend.
But he's finding out right now?
No, it's an old boyfriend, not the one I'm with now.
So, but this is, the boyfriend is finding out on television right now?
Oh, yeah, that's fine. Sorry, Ben.
Why'd you cheat on him?
I don't know. The guy was a famous athlete.
Which famous athlete?
I can't say his name.
Give us his initials.
TJ.
What sport does he play?
Hockey.
What team does he play for?
Florida. Tampa Bay.
Okay, so he plays for Tampa Bay. His initials are T and J. Tyler Johnson?
Okay, I have to go.
Well, that's sorry, Tyler. He's probably over it by now.
You tramp! This has become such a thing now to blow up the spot of athletes when they hook up. This is like the Jaromir Jagr thing. This is like the Julian Edelman thing. And now she's getting international fame and glory and Facebook likes and Twitter followers.
The real tramp part is when she, why did you do that? Because he was a famous athlete. There's the real tramp part.
Right. So the Tyler Johnson girl gets my vote because not only does she get him in trouble with his girlfriend in Washington State, as we come to find out. He's not married, but he has a girlfriend in Washington State, and he's trying to double back and say, well, this is before we started dating and blah, blah, blah. And he denied it. He said he didn't know it, but I think there's another report that he just told her that the timeline didn't match up. He has denied that he had sex with this girl.
Yeah, you got to go Jagr and just embrace it, right? I mean,
I would think, unless you want to
let the photo get out. I mean,
and she wasn't bad. She looked pretty good, I thought. I thought she was kind of hot.
Tyler Johnson's quote is, I have no idea who she is or why she said what was said. People can talk, but that doesn't mean it's true.
Yeah, there's some other gossip site that said he was trying to douse this by saying, oh, it was before we started dating and all that. But whatever. So it's, plus, you get it. Poor Ben. Who's this Ben guy? Now Ben looks like an idiot on the Jimmy Kimmel show.
Might have been Roethlisberger.
Unlikely.
Yeah. I mean, it's going to be awkward to be watching Tampa games from here on out. Every time they...
What if he's a big Tampa Bay Lightning fan, like the boyfriend of that 18-year-old was a big Jagr fan? Wouldn't that complete the circle of life? Oh, so the Tyler Johnson girl gets my Jagoff of the Week vote.
Jagette of the Week.
She's a Jagette of the Week. Has there ever been a Jagette of the Week? Or
Yes.
Oh, there have been? Okay, good.
We've had several, including the ESPN reporter Brent McHenry, very famous landslide winner.
Yes, I can imagine how that would be a landslide winner. She was in Pittsburgh last week. She did the Steeler game against the Ravens. Mm. A little overrated in person, I thought. Not as hot as I expected.
Hope Solo also won this year.
Oh, for driving the van drunk?
Stuff. Yeah, insulting, arresting officers and everything else when she was arrested.
Well, the best part about that story was Jeremy Stevens driving the U.S. soccer van tanked.
The best or worst story of it. I'm probably going to go Arrieta. I thought about voting just on principle, the Dolphins as an organization and the Bills for, again, putting the Patriots like as such definitive favorites to win the AFC this year. Yeah, I mean, getting back to the Patriots versus the field in the AFC, how big of a joke are the Dolphins with Philbin and Ndamukong Suh and you see these Tannehill reports from practice where, like, scout team players are picking him off and he's mocking what they're paid. and saying enjoy your practice.
Yes, I did see that. What I also saw was Tom Brady violating the salary cap by paying the practice squad guys that intercept him in practice.
Now, that's cool, though. I mean, I'm not a big Brady fan, but come on, that's a cool thing.
Well, you know what? This is one of these things where if it got out about a different team, the Patriots fan base would go, oh, if it happened to Brady, we turn it into a federal case.
Like this, I don't know.
He's violating the salary cap as far as I'm concerned. Tom Brady, Patriots, salary cap violation.
Hey, well, does the guy from DraftKings deserve any votes for winning the $350,000 by cheating?
Yeah, that's criminal.
That's a good one.
But it is a good one.
Security and Exchange Commission should be all over that.
But in terms of Jagoff quotient guy, Ryan Tannehill, the Dolphins quarterback, gets picked off by one of the practice squad player during the walkthrough in London. And he says, according to the National Football Post, enjoy your practice squad paycheck and enjoy your practice squad trophy.
Yeah, that's really – the guy's doing what he's supposed to be doing.
That's
what I mean about the difference between a guy out there legitimately trying to kick a field goal and missing and a guy – that's a Jagoff statement. That's a Jagoff way of thinking. That's a good vote.
I'm voting Tannehill.
You know what? I may switch. I may switch from Scobie. That's real low rent.
I mean, those guys are paid not bad money, but it's not great money. I forget what they're making now. What are practice squad guys making a week? I mean,
I think it's about $4,000 a week, isn't it?
Okay, which is good money.
When they started the practice squad, I think it was $1,000 a week.
But I think it's up.
Yeah.
They're supposed to be making you better, Ryan. You know, that's what they're out there for, to try to make plays so you don't throw picks in games, which you're obviously pretty good at.
I'm still going with the Tyler Johnson hoe bag.
Do we know her name? Do we have the Jaguars name, or is just Tyler Johnson?
I don't know if I have the Jaguars name exactly. I don't think it matters.
All right. Email sportstalk@tribweb.com. You're welcome to send us votes or just thoughts.
$6,300 a week it's up to.
Wow.
That's
good. Now,
that's very good money.
First in is from Israel today, our good friend Israel, who's overseas, but he listens to the show, and he's been an emailer throughout the years.
Yeah, we haven't heard from him in a while.
No, he says, I'm sorry the Astros won last night, guys. I was hoping for Yankees-Pirates, a replay of the 1960 World Series, and maybe get Maz and Verdon and Grote and all those guys some national TV time. So I'm bummed this morning. That would have been cool. But Tim's right, the Yankees are very nondescript and injured.
Yeah, he pointed that out even before that game.
Yeah, it's the Sabathia rehab and everything else.
I was off last night. I was actually looking forward to sitting and watching that game. In fact, I watched it with a buddy of mine who grew up in northeastern PA. He's a big Yankee fan. And, it was like watching a documentary on WQED about earthworms or something. It was terrible.
Yep.
8 total hits. I mean, it's just there was no drama.
Hey, bit of breaking news. We got the Pirates roster set for today. They're a 25-man roster. They went with 9 pitchers and 3 catchers, 5 outfielders, and 8 infielders.
Cole and Liriano are the only 2 starting pitchers, so if Cole gets in trouble, Liriano would be the go-to guy.
Which leads into David's email. David in Tennessee said, how long of a leash for Cole tonight, knowing that 1 or 2 runs could be enough? And also, would you put all hands on deck except for Jay Happ? But according to this roster, you're right, guy. Liriano's active, and he would probably be the first guy in that if he needs trouble.
Maybe Blanton, Joe Blanton's on there.
Yeah, Bastardo, Blanton, Caminero, Cole, Hughes, Liriano, Melanson, Soria, and Watson are your 9 pitchers tonight.
All 3 catchers are on there.
I think Liriano's there to be a left-handed bat off the bench.
Yeah, he's had 3 catchers all 3 years. I don't know what I think that's just total insurance because what's Elias Diaz going to do? I mean,
That's just because you got to put him in there if it's an extra inning game and you want a pinch run for your catcher.
I guess no other surprises. I mean, Michael Morse is on the team. Pedro Florimond is active. Keon Broxton,
pinch runner.
Yep. Travis Snyder, my man. Lefty bat off the bench possibility. But, you know, if Pedro doesn't sit or if Ramirez does, those will be the first pretty much no-brainer pinch hitters of the day, right?
For sure.
But back to David's email. Let's say there's bases loaded in the 3rd or the 4th. Rizzo's up. Cole hasn't looked real good. It's a 1-0 game. Would you consider bringing Liriano in that early for the lefty-lefty matchup to try to get out of a jam if you think Cole's struggling a little bit? That's a tough choice for Hurdle to have to make. He's going to have to feel it during the moment. It's hard for me to even say I would or I wouldn't. You kind of have to see the game, right, and see how it's playing out.
Yeah, if they're down 3-0 in the fourth, maybe you do something like that, or 2-0 in the fourth, just to get a pinch hitter up there, and then either go with Blanton or go with Liriano and try to get a run across with your pinch hitter.
If it's 1-0 and bases are loaded, and he's I think you got to be real careful with that.
But then you're also potentially, just for the sake of argument here, if you're going with the pinch hitter for Cole in the early innings, and you're taking a guy off the bench to swing for him, and like you said, that first hitter is going to be, what, Snyder or Ramos Ramirez or Pedro Alvarez, one of those three guys, whichever ones aren't playing, then you're just using them as a pinch hitter, and you don't use their bat again throughout the lineup, because you're not, I would think, if you made the decision already, Arrieta's not coming out of the game, right? So if you made the decision already what your lineup is going to be, then you're burning your best pinch hitter in a 2-0 situation as opposed to what could be a 2-1 situation or 3-2 situation later in the game, because you don't want to take out the bat at the position that you've started the other person for. So you're kind of burning your best pinch hitter in a less than high leverage situation.
Yeah, it's
you're getting Arrieta in the fourth inning as opposed to Arrieta in the seventh or eighth, or a reliever in the eighth or ninth. You know what I mean?
That's true. It's not a no-brainer. You're right. It's got to be a... I just pulled up Liriano's splits here. Anthony Rizzo's hitting 174 against Liriano. 4-for-23 with just, well, he has that one home run against him. That's pretty good success. I wonder if they'd consider Liriano for a Rizzo matchup if you needed him, based on that history. Chris Bryant's hit him pretty good, 3-for-6. So that's not a good, the opposite way. But those are the two guys that scare me tonight on the Cubs offense, right? It's no question. It's Bryant and Rizzo. So if you get into a jam and you need a pitcher, why not go to Frankie? I don't know what his history of relieving is. But even if it's the seventh inning, would you consider Liriano? Like if you want to save Watson and Melanson, might you go to Liriano in the seventh for a Rizzo matchup for one batter? Or would you trust your bullpen as good as it's
been? If it's one batter, why wouldn't you use Watson?
But I want to save him for my eighth, though.
Well, what's the situation if you're saving him for the eighth?
Like, let's say it's the seventh. It's a one-run game in the seventh, or it's a tie game in the seventh. Cole's out of gas. He's hit 100 pitches. Rizzo's at the plate. Runners at second and third, or first.
Boy, I don't know
third.
About that, since Liriano oftentimes is not that great in the first inning.
Yeah, it's a gamble for sure. He can be a little wild until he gets going. What do you think, Guy? Would you consider Liriano at any point in this game, unless it's odd circumstances, like a...
Yeah, I don't think he'd be my first choice, and I want him to start game one if you win too, unless you're that desperate. I mean, they've got a great bullpen. They've got other people I would bring in. I think Liriano's on there more if Cole takes a line drive off the forehead in the second inning or something like that, and then you're still scoreless. I think if he gets into trouble and you fall behind, I think you'll see a steady flow of relievers. Myself.
I would use Bastardo or Watson before I used Liriano.
I mean, they'll have lefties
Bastardo
in their lineup.
Really?
I mean,
don't you want a reliever doing a reliever's job? I mean, unless you're suggesting, Ken, that you think it's going to be, if it's the seventh inning and it's nothing to nothing and you feel like this game is going to go a couple innings into extras, then that's when I would consider Liriano. But like I said, it's not like he's the greatest starter in the world. You know, like the first inning of a starting outing. He usually gets better, you know, in the early to mid-innings, and he will occasionally allow a run. So if it's a tie game late, you got a guy who's coming into an unfamiliar circumstance, having him be a relief pitcher where the game is on the line right away. I don't know. That makes me – I think Guy's right. I think he's more out there in case Cole blows up or he gets hurt or something along those lines and it's emergency.
Yeah, Bastardo has been good lately. And I suppose if it goes extra innings, you want Liriano to be able to pitch 5 or 6 innings in extras, right? That's why you have another starter on the roster, and they didn't put Worley or Locke or any of those guys as available. So you probably do want to keep him for emergencies.
They've won 15 of his last 16 starts, Liriano. I mean, he hasn't been great in all of them. Some of them he's come out and they've come back to win, but that's still pretty amazing.
And because Rizzo's so deadly, but so susceptible to Liriano, that's why I'd consider it. You know, just for that particular matchup, not for anything else. You know, if a guy's hitting 174 off you, that's, and you've struck him out 8 times of 23 at bats.
Yeah, I think splits will matter. I think you got to manage like there's no tomorrow, but I don't think you can overdo it. I think you kind of got to go with how you got here for a large part of it. You know,
yeah.
I don't think you can go crazy.
When Leland pulled or left Drabek in, was that in the Game 7, of course, which, you know, the Sid Slid game, was that typical of the way he'd handled Drabek for the year, guy? Do you remember his, or was that abnormal and everybody at the time knew he was trying to stretch him a little bit?
Boy.
He was in, over into 100 pitches, wasn't he?
Yeah, I just think it was, I don't think it was abnormal. I mean, I don't know, you know, you look back at it and you think they should have left him in, but, you know, there were people that didn't want Drabek starting Game 70. I think he went 0-3 in that series.
Right.
They wanted Tim Wakefield to pitch every game because, oh, his arm doesn't get tired, and he had baffled him and done pretty well. So I don't think at the moment they took him out, people were screaming and throwing their hands up in the air. They didn't do that until after they lost the game.
Not like there's a great deal of faith in Belinda going into that series anyway, because he'd been, you know, he was good, but he had a couple Mike Williams saves, you know, where he gave up
runs. But he was falsely blamed for that. I mean, there's so many mistakes made in that, and, you know, the lousy throw by Bonds, the errors by Lean.
Bad call by the umpire.
Well, the big thing in that game, when Randy Marsh, Jim Leland and him, did Randy Marsh get sick or is he the one?
No,
that
Randy
came
Marsh,
in?
He was the one that came in.
He came in for McSherry, right?
Yeah.
And Randy Marsh had thrown Leland out an unbelievable amount of times. I think he had tossed him 7 times in his career or something. Damon Berryhill was struck out. He took a pitch at the belt, right down the middle, strike 3, and they called it a ball. So a lot of things went wrong. Stan Belinda was the unfortunate victim in all that.
You ever heard Mike LaValliere's story about that?
Uh-uh.
Mike LaValliere got thrown out of a spring league game in Bradenton, a rookie league game in Bradenton, because he was walking up the foul line. And
as a player?
This is as a manager or a coach years after, and he saw Randy Marsh, and they actually just started talking about it, and then he lost his mind and started screaming.
Well, Ken, if you remember when we had Spanky on this spring, you get talking about that. That's still an open sore with him, that game.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
I didn't want to bring that up when we had him on. I was still too nervous. You might have asked him about it, actually.
No, but I remember that because he was, who did it? The Braves, 2 years ago. The Braves did those bobbleheads. They did
the
anniversary
slide,
of the slide. And it was Sid and Mike LaValliere were two of the bobbleheads. And the other bobblehead was Randy Marsh, the umpire.
Spanky, I think, at a high school game, blew his up or broke it at the, remember?
Yeah, because it was for charity. It was something for charity, right?
He was coaching a high school team down there for a while.
They needed him to license this. Like, he needed to sign off on the licensing. So he signed off on the licensing if one-third of the benefits, whatever, it was going to go to a charity. And then, he did something like that. He blew it up or
buried it, or I can't remember the details.
Matthew emails the show here on Jagoff and Wildcard Wednesday. Pirates' best chance, guys, of winning is Cole hitting Arrieta in his first at-bat with a pitch. Ramirez makes the Pirates' lineup complete. Who else on their team is a legit cleanup hitter? I'd put Aram in. Hope Hurdle doesn't take out the regulars and the game ends up going into extra innings too soon. For instance, Snyder, Harrison, and Ramirez are the only ones that I'd be pinch hitting. And they've got too many people on the bench that shouldn't be on the field in the playoffs.
I personally in no way have Ramirez playing over Josh Harrison. He doesn't have the range at third base. Harrison has hit better. The chance of hitting a home run off of Arrieta is so much more slim than Harrison getting a hit or two and causing havoc running. I mean, I don't know what they'll do, but I disagree with that.
Why can't you have the cleanup spot be Marte? Why is that so bad?
Has he hit there all year? I guess he has a couple times.
Yeah, he's hit there. I thought he did.
Walker's
just the
done
other
more
night.
Of it, though, right?
Yeah, I guess. But I mean, if you go, well, how would you do lefty righty then? I guess you could do lefty righty lefty if you do him, Walker. I mean, Marte fifth, Pedro sixth, Cervelli seventh. You could do lefty righty if you wanted to burn through their bullpen later in the game.
Yeah, who's the best protector for McCutcheon is what it comes down to, right? And maybe they don't have
the best
no matter
protection
who it is.
For McCutcheon is Marte. You don't
guess.
Think so?
He's a strikeout candidate, but maybe that's not what you care about the most. You care about a run producer, right? You could be right. I'm not saying that's totally out of
I think he's got more power potential in the eyes of a lot of people than Walker does. Like, if you're Jake Arrieta, who do you think is more likely to hit a homer off of you, Marte or Walker?
Probably Marte, based on his difficulty of lefties hitting worse off him, right? And Walker's going to hit lefty tonight?
Yeah.
You're probably right on that. On that front.
But I get it. I mean, if they put Walker as the cleanup hitter and they want to go lefty-righty to flip-flop it, they would be doing so from third to fourth to fifth to sixth to seventh. And then you'd have Mercer batting eighth. So
one thing I don't want people to sit back and if they lose the game, no matter what lineup they put out there, blame the lineup for the reason that they lost the game. You know, unless he does something really crazy.
Yeah, I mean, for all these months since the Bumgarner game, if you thought back to it and said, man, I blame the lineup for that, I mean, you might blame who was the starting pitcher, but you don't blame the lineup because it didn't matter. They could have batted two guys, one in each batter's box.
Yeah.
And they still would have gotten – then they would have had 18 strikeouts or 25 strikeouts or whatever because Bumgarner was going to take care of business regardless of who was in the lineup, and Arrieta might do the same thing tonight.
Yeah, Hurdle didn't get any criticism last year, did he, for the Bumgarner game? I mean, I don't remember him.
Well, the only criticism was trying to go for it for the division, right? And so you had to wind up with Volquez being the starting pitcher in the wild card game. So if you wanted to second guess, it was second guessing who the opposing starter was. And I don't remember any real second guessing as to who was hitting against Bumgarner. Am I wrong on that?
I don't remember. Well, you lose 8-0. No.
And I think the same kind of thing could happen today.
It's like complaining about the offensive coordinator after a loss. Sometimes it's always if you'd have just called the right plays, you'd have won the game. If you'd have just changed that batting order around, you would have won the game.
Jason in the Berg says, I got to give my Jag off of the week vote to Tim for predicting the Penguins will have multiple injuries like all the rest of their years. However, I agree with Tim 100%. He's going to give you the vote anyway.
He's just trying not to jinx it.
Sometimes it sucks to be right.
Justin M. says, Jag off of the week. Going to go with people who actually think the PNC Park crowd is going to have an impact on Arrieta or change this game. It's not football. I think Arrieta's tweets are funny and true. It's good to hear Hurdle say they shouldn't change the wild card game format. The Pirates held themselves back from winning the division this year. And I want to get to that, too, because both managers and, Tim, I think you got Jared Hughes talking about this as well, the one-game nature versus changing the format here to best two out of three. Let's start with Hurdle. He was asked about this, and I don't know who would have the most cause to bitch about this. Probably the Cubs, I guess, since they're the ones that had to go on the road. It's their first year in, but both teams would have, a right to. Well, I guess the Pirates, because the Cubs wouldn't have been in the playoffs at all in the old format. Here's what Hurdle had to say about the one-and-done nature of the wild card game.
One-and-done? It is what it is. I'm not going to overcook it. This isn't the time to have the conversation. Basically, I think there's better questions we all can ask and talk about. I'm sure there'll be more conversation moving forward just about how everybody feels. The one thing I am aware of, it's hard to penalize teams that have won their division by making them wait longer to play. And sometimes people that aren't connected to that don't care about that, and that's real. To take a day or two off, that's fine. That's easy. To take 5, 6, 7, 8, that's not easy. That's very challenging. So I think that has to be kept in concept as well.
Which is interesting to me that he would take that question and give sympathy for the Cardinals, basically, in this situation, right? He's saying it wouldn't be fair to the Cardinals to make them sit for 5 days if we had to play a best-of-three series.
He thinks that he is going to win the division next year. That's why. That's where that's coming from.
Or reminiscing about his Colorado Rockies days, I guess.
Well, we got a Rocky reference in there at some point. I don't know if we've got the clip anywhere, but Madden talked about that too. Here's Madden talking about two out of three.
Mm-hmm. Only time you like one of them is when you win that first game. Then you absolutely love it. But when this concept came on board, I remember talking to Tom Verducci, and at that time, I think Tommy was all about one and done because of the drama involvement. I've always liked the idea of best out of three. I thought that'd be the appropriate way to do it after a long season. So my stance has not changed on that. I've been involved in a one and done Cleveland a couple of years ago, which we had the one and done in Toronto. Then we had to go to Texas and had to do it in Cleveland. So it's the most fun and no fun at the same time. Of course, you got to win it. But I just think over the course of 162, a long season, to really make it fair to everybody, I like the concept of best out of three. I know the season's long enough the way it is now, and there probably would have to be some kind of concessions made or creative thinking involved. But I just think that at the end of the year, at the end of the day, basically, to permit at least the best out of three would be the fairest thing to do.
But that goes in the face of what Hurdle's saying, right, Guy? I mean, Hurdle's saying it's not fair to the division winner. You can play a best of three that might take 4 or 5 days. like Joe Maddon saying that's the most fair for everybody to play a best of three, but actually Hurdle's saying the opposite. It's not
right.
fair.
Right.
I guess Hurdle's right. That probably would be a long time to sit for a baseball team. You know, football teams do it who get the bye week, and it hurts them sometimes.
Well, you don't have to really make them wait all that long, as we've pointed out before. You know, you can have a couple of games crammed in as planned doubleheaders. I brought that up to Jared Hughes yesterday, and he said, oh, that actually makes sense. That makes like that sounds like a good idea. I know, guys, you pointed out the minor leagues would probably be pissed about that if you allowed for expanded rosters on those days. But you know what? Tough, so be it. You're in the minors for a reason. That's how I view it. My belief is 2 out of 3 is the way to go. And so how long will the St. Louis Cardinals be waiting around then? Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, and when would game one be? Friday?
Yeah, you'd have to have a day off somewhere. The problem with the wild card teams is almost every year they're the ones scrambling the last weekend. I mean, it's unusual to have the situation that the Pirates did this year where they really for the last month were pretty much cemented. I mean, they never got really pushed by the Cubs. You never were really like, oh, my God. As soon as they got close enough, they backed them off. And as soon as the Pirates got close enough to the Cardinals, they backed off. But more years than not, you're going to have the case of the American League, which is a total jumble mess heading into the last three games. And so you say, so what? If you're not good enough to win the division, then you deserve to have to play those three wild card games without having your best pitching lined up or with no rest.
Well, as it is, the Cardinals rest 4 days, right? They play Sunday.
So just Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, and then they play Friday night. So, all right, four.
4 days off, yeah.
4 days before they play. So if you add, I mean, you're right. You just have to start this series on Monday, which is tough to the wild card teams, too. That's not really fair.
Well, again,
and if you win the first two, you're done Tuesday, and then you got 2 days off before the next series would start. And you know, the other thing, too, is they don't have, and I know they have to do it for television and everything. Why are the World Series dates set in stone now?
Yeah, I don't understand that.
If all of this
either.
Stuff gets done earlier, let's say you've got an NLCS and an NLDS, or an ALCS, that one's done in five games, one's done, and let's even argue six. That may save you a day or two, and you're playing on Halloween rather than November 4th. It could be a big difference in weather at that time of the year. Before you don't have to tell me when Game 7 of the World Series is in August.
Yeah, that is strange. Is that a TV thing? Like to?
I'm sure because they got, what, Game 1's always a Saturday, 2 a Sunday, Game 6 would be a Saturday, Game 7 be a Sunday. With you know, that's the way they have it set up now.
Right. I'm sure that dictates everything.
Like I always say, you go back and you look – you look at highlights of the 71 World Series, Game 7, and the Colts football lines are all over the field. They didn't get completely erased. And Kurt Gowdy's doing NFL score updates during Game 7 of the World Series.
Email sportstalk@tribweb.com. What do you think about the one-game nature of the wild card? And tonight, I'd love to hear people's just vibes on who do you think the hero could be or how scared you are. Josh Taylor hates that. He's just penned a piece for our website. Check it out at sportstalk.triblive.com. Josh talking about
Garrett Cole tonight. It does make it unbelievably exciting. I mean, the thing that what do we live more for than anything? A Game 7 in a Stanley Cup playoff series, a Game 7 in a World Series. This is football's always like that. Football's always a one-and-done situation. I mean, you know, so a part of it and this year, because the Pirates had such a good record and they have to face another team, you know, an unheard-of situation where the three best teams all come from the same division. And I think it could use some changes, but you also have to be careful to legislate changes based on an anomaly, which this is.
Jason from the Rum Bunter says, are we resigned to Polanco playing tonight, guys? I'm hoping for Harrison in right field, minimize the impact of Polanco's lapses, and provide better double switching options later in the game with runs and base runners at a premium. Polanco's mistakes scare me.
We brought that up yesterday. That was the one that we probably skipped the day before, Monday, when you were off, Ken. We were talking about how the lineup may go. We didn't really investigate the idea of keeping Aram and Pedro Alvarez in there and Harrison playing right for Polanco. So when he was asked about Polanco yesterday, I was paying particular attention, and I feel like somebody else was fishing for the same kind of information when they asked the question. And Hurdle went on this soliloquy about Polanco, about how this is going to be a good experience for him and how great players sometimes need to cut their teeth early in their careers in a game like this. And the way he phrased his answer made it sound like, yes, Gregory Polanco is going to be in the lineup tonight. I did not get any sense from that answer that Polanco is going to be on the bench for this game.
No, I think he's going to ride his young, talented upside as opposed to fearing, living his fears, right, which is a Hurdleism.
Wait until this new kicker has to kick. We'll see how much he's living in his fears. He actually dropped living in our fears for the overtime yesterday. Did you notice that? He used that phrase of his, living in our fears, when he was discussing the overtime. He sure as hell lived in his fears when he avoided Scobie twice, though, didn't he?
Yeah, that's true. That's true. Hurdle's more of a respect everything, fear nothing. It's Tomlin who's the don't live in your fears. Guy, well, you like to live in your beers, like Duffy beers.
That's right.
Hey, present the morning show here on Trib Live Radio. They're at 294 Curry Hollow Road. Check them out at 412-653-BEER. All of their weekly specials at duffysbeer.com. Get their Oktoberfest selection before it's gone. Pumpkin beers, too. Duffy's Beer, Tim Benz, Guy Junker, Ken Laird, Jagoff Wednesday. SoCal Lou says, give me Steve Smith for Jagoff of the Week, guys, for putting Mike Mitchell on his hit list.
That always kind of stupid, especially since it wasn't him that hit him.
It's a good vote, Lou.
That is a good vote.
Second would be the people on Facebook who say the Pirates will score 9 runs today. I think they should be drug tested. I don't know what what Facebook site Lou's reading, but...
Maybe if they get Arrieta out in the sixth and it's 3-0, and then the bullpen allows 6, that could happen. But I don't think they're getting 9 off Arrieta.
Luke and Lebo says, I was a 12-year-old watching the 92 NLCS guys in my room in an old black and white TV. I remember just about everything. Most of all, I remember crying myself to sleep that night. But for me, tonight could all wash it away. I know this is just a wild card game, but I believe this is the best team they've had since 92. The team that has the best chance to win full series and get to the World Series the first time in my life. Lose tonight, one thing may stay the same. This 35-year-old may be crying himself to sleep. Prediction from Lou, Pirates down 3-1, tie it in the eighth and win 4-3 in 11. Oh, man, would that be a... Can you imagine the crowd if they're down 3-1 in the eighth and they tie it up? Just the atmosphere at PNC Park tonight. That place is going to blow the roof off with, you know... living in your fears for 8 innings and then erupting like that.
You know what, when he brings that up, how old is he? He said the first legitimate chance they have at the World Series in his life, so he must be young then, huh, if he doesn't remember
the
90s.
35, he said. Yeah.
35? Yeah.
He's my age.
He can kind of, you can kind of remember 92, can't you?
Oh, yeah, well, that's what he's saying. He remembers it so vividly. And I do as well. I remember being face down on my living room floor when Bream scored that. It was
because they had a legitimate chance in each of those years in the mid-90s.
I remember being face down in the Talking Bucks set.
Well, I wound up in the, that's, I think I told you guys, in the Syracuse University Medical Center with a broken hand because I punched a steel door. I was so mad.
That's a smart one.
Knuckle is still displaced.
Narcos in Bethel Park giving a second to the Josh Scobie vote, Guy, who you got for Jagoff of the Week for the missed field goals, plain and simple. Another vote for, well, first vote actually for the NFL refs for the blown calls on Monday night. That from CJ. Derek says, Ken, that's the first good call you've had in a while. Ryan Tannehill for Jagoff of the Week. Thanks for that backhanded compliment. Appreciate
Wait a minute.
That,
no
Derek.
One is giving me support of the Tyler Johnson hoe. I haven't gotten
Not yet.
What?
Not one yet.
Blowing up his spot. That's just a dirty move. That is a dirty modern day social media move. Where are the good old days where an athlete could just hook up on the road and not have to worry about it? Go down to play the Kings. You got all that sweet LA, you know what, walking around the streets. Take advantage of it and then go back to Florida to play the Panthers again. And you can't even do that anymore without it winding up on national television for crying out loud. That stinks.
Are you speaking to something in your personal life, Tim?
Not at all.
Jim in New Bedford emails. Plain and simple, Jagoff of the Week. It's Ray Lewis, guys. Did you see after the Monday night game, he said the refs should pay for the crime of blowing a call. Really, Ray, you of all people should say pay for the crime. The statue of you should be pulled down like Saddam Hussein outside of the M&T Bank Stadium. Should be in jail for those murders in Atlanta. So Ray Lewis with a vote today.
Ray Lewis can get a vote just about any day.
Him and the Flyers and... Tortorella every week.
From Sean up in Canada. Practice squad players, guys, get $6,700 a week, actually. Up here in the Great White North, the CFL practice squad players get $500 a week. I don't know if Sean's accurate on that, but...
Sign me
Josh,
up.
Josh said $6,300. Where'd you get that, Josh? Two different places, so... Well, roughly, yeah. Okay.
Sign me
a
up.
A couple over $400 a week.
Sean, yeah, if you're making $6,700.
Scobie Dooby Doo gets his Jagoff of the Week as well.
I thought Scobie would win in a runaway this week.
He's starting to pull away here. Another Ray Lewis vote, Chuck in Bethel Park, for saying the Lions lost on a technicality. Same guy who got away with murder. The same way, Ray. Dan says, here's my thoughts on what their lineup should be tonight, guys. Wanted to get your take. If I'm the Pirates with outs at a premium, I want my best hitters more often. I don't care about lefty-righty structure, so I would put Marte leadoff, Harrison second, McCutchen third, Walker fourth, and Cervelli fifth. In other words, put Polanco at sixth instead of in the leadoff spot. I don't think that's going to happen.
I don't hate it. A guy like Marte can be a disruptor. As Tim said, he strikes out, but we talked yesterday about I wouldn't mind seeing guys dump some bunts down there. He's not a good fielder. Get him off the mound. Get him running around. And I could see a 1-2-3 top of the first. Marte comes up, bunts, steals second, and goes to third on a ground out, scores on a fly ball. Their postseason sports, scoring first is unbelievably important, and I don't ever remember a game where I think it's more important than tonight.
You know, Mercer and Harrison both, when I talked to them on their own, brought up the idea of how important it was to disrupt Jake Arrieta, and they advanced on their own the idea of getting him into the stretch. And it is ironic. I don't know if you guys feel this way. I always think it's funny whenever postseason baseball comes around. The teams that are in the postseason because they have really good pitching, sometimes dominant pitching. And you see these guys that run through the postseason like Bumgarner and Schilling and Johnson and pretty much anybody who wasn't an Atlanta Brave pitcher, because the Braves pitchers could all field their positions. Mm-hmm. But all these other guys that are dominant, Roger Clemens, you know, these guys, they're great, but then you get them in the stretch and they're not used to it because they're great and they never let people on base. And then when you get people on base, you can screw with them in their heads because they're not used to this situation because you're pretty good too. You got in the postseason, so you're more apt to get guys on base even against the good pitchers. So what Mercer and Harrison were basically saying is get them at something that they're not used to doing, which is working from the stretch, because they don't do it too often. Nobody gets on base against them.
Yeah.
But we're good enough. We're here. We've won 98 games. We have to get guys on base occasionally, right? So let's get guys on base. Let's screw with them a little bit. I'm embellishing, but that was the sentiment to what they were saying.
Well, Polanco led off a week ago Sunday against Arrieta, and he singled in the seventh, and he stole a base. So if you want a disruptor, Polanco showed you a week and a half ago he could do just that against this guy.
What if you put all that speed up at the top there? What if you put a bat, and like I said, I think they're going to go.
Is he allergic to working from the stretch? Is that?
Sorry. What if you put Marte first and Polanco second?
I was looking up to the sky. Unfortunately, it's not sunny out. It's cloudy, so a guy couldn't induce his sneeze by looking at the sun.
I'm looking at stolen bases allowed this year. Lester leads the league, worse than the league, with 44. But Arrieta had 27, fourth most, and Cole was fifth with 25 stolen bases allowed. So these guys both.
There's going to be some running tonight.
Montero, their catcher, is 20% effective throwing out runners this year.
What were those numbers again? Arrieta was what?
He has allowed the fourth most stolen bases in the league this year with 27.
He's allowed the fourth most stolen bases, and he's barely allowed anybody on base since the All-Star break.
They're running. How many is Cole allowed?
25.
And where is that, sixth?
Fifth. Lester was the worst. A.J. Burnett was third worst.
Yeah.
So this was a three-game series, nothing would be sacred on the base.
Well, it's all different. Burnett makes no attempt, pays no attention to anybody over there, and doesn't hold runners on. Lester refuses to throw over there, which is why picking Marte off was a joke.
It was a joke.
I mean, him picking Marte off was, that's like Pedro Florimon hitting a home run off Arrieta tonight.
Back to Daniel, he says, give me Arrieta for Jagoff of the Week, guys. How else do you describe a bearded windbag who does on-field push-ups and cutoffs before the game? Let's beat this Jamoke. I think that speaks for us all, Dan. Well said. Montero is a worse catcher than Ross is in throwing runners out. Not that that's the way the Cubs are going to go tonight.
Montero's a much better hitter, though, and has been a good hitter against Cole.
There you go. He's a lefty, so, yeah, they're going to throw him in there. The Cubs are not a great defensive team either. That's the one thing, though. I've joked about the
curse
of the.
They're 25th or 26th in errors.
I could see them blowing it tonight. I really could. I could see the Luke scenario where even if the Cubs get a lead, it's not totally safe based on their bullpen and defensive ability, although their bullpen was pretty good in the last series that the Pirates faced them. They upgraded at the trade deadline, that's for sure. Ryan emails, last one here in our commercial-free 10 a.m. hour. Give me the Flyers for Jagoff of the Week just because, guys. But second place, anybody on the Pens medical staff that are okay with Pascal Dupuis playing? I love the guy. He's been one of the best all-around Penguins of the era. But this notion of him playing a contact sport on blood thinners to me is still asinine. And whatever this non-clotting issue is, it sounds like it has at least something to do with the dangers of blood thinners, which is basically diluted rat poison. It's a true story. Look it up. Wow, didn't know about that. But
I was on blood thinners once. Now I'm worried. Diluted rat poison.
Yeah. Whatever gets the job done. That's commercial-free 10 a.m. hour in the books. We got Rob Rossi coming up, our trip columnist. You think Rossi's nervous tonight? You think Rossi's in...
He's never nervous.
What's he got to be nervous about?
Who will he rip tomorrow if the Pirates lose? Where's the Rossi column going to go in anger? It's not Nutting. He wants Nutting to get praise.
He wants Nutting to get the Penguins.
Right. He's like in love with Nutting. Hurdle? Would he? No, probably McCutcheon. I could see him ripping McCutcheon tomorrow. Morning Sports Report on Trib Lab Radio brought to you by Invisible Fence Brand. Make sure you give them a check at InvisibleFence.com. Check out all their products. Help your pets enjoy more freedom in their yard. Tim Benz, Sky Junker, Ken Lair, Josh Taylor along for the noon hour. We got Jordan Burnfield, Cubs reporter at 11:45. And our columnist, Rob Rossi, next here on Trib Live.